Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off.
There's a swell happening where I think a lot of people are now sick of the swipe culture. And there's this thing called self-partnered, where people are like, you know what? I'm going to work on myself. And I think this is what's going to happen. I'm hoping it's what happens to get people to kind of look inward and go on their own self-journey.
So tell me, I hope that people are doing that, because this whole journey of like, it's sort of similar to what you were saying about, we feel like something's broken if we're not dating. So like, well, it's almost like our duty on the planet is to keep dating, keep having sex, but giving people permission, it's okay to slow down and say, what do I actually want? Who am I without a relationship?
Right. I think our duty is to be the best version of ourselves as possible. And I think the ripple of that is sex and all the great things that happen with sharing your life with someone else. But I don't think that's the sun we revolve around. Right. I think we need to kind of take the power back and go after our dreams and do what we feel is honest to us. And then if we happen to meet a partner, now we're coming in as a whole person instead of trying to fill holes.
Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and on today's show, I'm joined by the angry therapist, John Kim, to talk about his book, I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck, as well as the true way to man up. Topics include, how can you go from being an angry macho guy to an evolved version of yourself? What are some steps fathers and parents in general can take to become better role models? Why being vulnerable can help you when it comes to maintaining your relationships, and how working on your mind can help you be more attentive in the bedroom? All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com. You're going to love our site. We've got lots of information for you on our site and Sex with Emily across the board on all social media. Intentions with Emily. For each show, you guys, let's set an intention together. What do I mean by this? Okay, so you're listening to the show now. Think about, like, what am I going to get out of listening to this episode? It helps so much to set an intention because, you know, once we have an intention for something, we end up manifesting that and it happens. It could be, I'm wondering what it means, you know, to really be a man. I keep hearing about toxic masculinity. How do I really man up in a way that's healthy? Or I've been struggling internally. I didn't think traditional therapy would be helpful. What do I do? Well, my intention for the show was to help you understand that I really like John Kim, and I think that his message for men is really healthy. And I think it's a way to kind of ease you guys into therapy and realize, you know, or maybe even call it coaching. I think you're going to like his attitude and it's going to be inspiring for men and for women. So enjoy the show. John Kim, aka The Angry Therapist, and promoting his podcast and a lot of interesting things that you're doing. The Angry Therapist. Instagram is The Angry Therapist. All this stuff will also in theangrytherapist.com. It'll all be in our show notes at sexwithemily.com. Your licensed therapist, John Kim, and after going through a divorce, you decided, like, you pioneered the online life coaching movement. Wow.
Yeah, I was frustrated with the clinical world and how you become a therapist. I know you have a PhD, so I don't know which route you took, but it was lonely and expensive, and I just thought there was a better way to help people, help other people, especially with the internet and, you know, all the different ways we help people now.
I feel like you are such a strong male voice, like you have such a great male perspective, you know, on masculinity and relationships. And I think, you know, I think that men need that. You have like a different version of what it means to man up.
Yeah, and, I think.
And you had to go through it.
I had to go through it. You know, I went on my man journey about 10 years ago after divorce. I always feel like after an expired relationship, the soil is so rich to actually grow, depending on how you look at it. If you have anger and resentment and you go that way, then not so much. But if you really look inward, you're going to go on your hero's journey. And so I went on mine a decade ago.
Yeah, that's this is what I love, is because I believe that we all need to go on a journey in some ways. And so I feel like a lot of men do not ever take the journey. They don't even take the first step.
Yes, it usually takes something like they have to lose
traumatic,
something.
Right. I was going to say they lose a parent. They get really sick. They
or
have a new
addiction
lease on life.
Or lose a custody or something, right?
Exactly. Right. And then they're like, oh shit, this is my rock bottom. I have to start to feel what's wrong. I can't be angry anymore. Because I feel like I love that you are here, because I feel like it's such a great example and such a role model. Because when I sit here every night saying, I think you need therapy, you got to work on it, it's sort of this, people still think it means I'm crazy.
Right,
and so
right.
I love, you've kind of redefined that, having sex in an unconventional way. But I want to go back to your journey when you were 36.
Right.
You're getting divorced and you're angry.
I'm angry and I'm unhappy
and
I'm hurt. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then what's the, and then how did you decide I'm going to be, like, what were you doing before then?
I was a screenwriter and I wasn't happy and I was chasing shiny things. And I thought that until I got the house in the hills and the Range Rover Porsche combo and all of the fancy things, I tied that to happiness. And since that wasn't happening, I was miserable. hence the miserable fuck.
Okay. His book is I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck, An Every Man's Guide to a Meaningful Life. John Kemp.
Yeah. So I was in therapy myself and I was talking to my own therapist and he's like, what do you want to do if you can't do that? And I was like, I want to do what you're doing. You know, I want to actually help people and I love psychology. And then so at 35, I went back to school.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so is that when you first entered therapy, is when you were actually going on the journey, or had you dabbled before?
I dabbled before.
But like by dabbling, you went twice.
I went when there was a problem.
Right.
Which you shouldn't do.
Exactly.
You should go before.
Right. So you can, because you're actually building skills and tools.
Yeah. It's like when people work out, they don't go, you got to go to maintain.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I always say, people are like, oh yeah, I went twice. I'm like, no, if you went to the gym twice this year, you're not in shape.
Right.
Right. I mean, you have to, it's a continuous process and it takes about a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Six months to a year until you actually first feel it sometimes. But I don't want people to be scared. So what was the first layer of the onion that you peeled back when you started going to therapy at 36? Because they always say therapy is like peeling back the layers of an onion.
Realizing that when you are in a relationship, you're bringing so much more to the relationship that has to do with your story, your wiring, attachment styles, love language, like all these things. I just thought, you know, I thought love was basically I find someone attractive and let's go.
Right, exactly. Well, great sex for 2 years and then I don't know what to do about it.
Right.
So you were that, and then you realize, oh no, I have to.
It takes work.
Right.
And you have to look at yourself and you got to own some shit, you know? And then I was like, oh, relationships are actually built. And I think, you know, I have this theory that you have to swim past the breakers to build something sustainable. And I think most people don't, because after the honeymoon, after the, you know, the great sex and all that, if things start getting boring or stale, or there's stuff happening underneath that you're not aware of, then suddenly you bounce. And especially today with like swipe culture, everyone thinks that there's, you know, we're all like baseball cards now.
Right. So, exactly. Like, oh, there's a problem that I'm going to sign up onto the app again and dump this person. We know this. We get it. We've gone through therapy and done it. But a lot of people are still living in this place of like, when the honeymoon's over, we don't want to have sex. There's a huge problem, but I have no one to go to. I don't know who to talk to about it. So they don't even know that you could fix it.
Right.
But they don't talk. They don't feel like therapy would save. And so they blame themselves and think, oh, well, then I'm a bad person or my partner's a bad person. Yeah. When really it's just a matter of learning how to work together.
They create their own prison. They're on an island talking to that volleyball like Tom Hanks.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Okay. You want to help me answer a call? Let's talk to Zach in Florida. He's 32. Hey, Zach. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Dr. Emily, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? I'm here with John Kim, the angry therapist. You got two here to help.
Yeah, well, you spoke to a lot of my truth. So I'm in a new relationship.
Okay.
Everything's perfect. We mesh well together. Our affection is great outside of the bedroom. We have the same values. However, when it comes to the bedroom, I can't say it's 100%. I have always viewed sex as very animalistic. I like it rough.
Okay.
And he's a much more passionate guy. I see this going somewhere further, but I want to learn how we can work in synergy together to kind of make that happen, because he's not in my lane. I'm not in his lane.
How long
so
have you guys been
kind of mesh those two lives?
Okay. So you know that, okay, that's a great question. So what you're saying is that you know that you want to be a little more rough and he's more like passionate, wants to make it last longer. And you're just like, well, what do we do? So I always say, I'd love to hear from you, John Kim, that, you know, you just got to talk about it. Like, yeah. A lot of this stuff is just like, we feel like we have to show up already knowing how to be our partner's best lover.
Yes.
And then otherwise, and then we don't try and we get nervous because we think, oh, I'm going to fail them. I'm going to fuck up. They're going to leave me. When my belief is just having a really honest conversation with your partner without like shaming or blaming and thinking like, you never do this, or I can't ever be as passionate as you want. Just be like, hey, you know what? I kind of like a little more rough. You want some more passion? Tell me more about what that passion looks like. I'll show you what the rough looks like. Let's try to figure out what could work for both of us.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a great opportunity to create some new love experiences. I think it's about tossing old blueprints that we keep trying to chase, obviously communication, and creating some new experiences. So being open, curious over judgmental.
Okay. All right. So Zach, what about just having a conversation, being like, you know what? I'm so into this relationship. It's so hot. Our sex life, not in the bedroom. But when you guys are like having dinner, going for a walk, and just saying, let's just talk about this because I wanted this to work. So.
Yeah. I'd definitely be open to that dialogue.
Okay.
You know, you're just always worried about it at first because you're like,
they're
going to think I'm a freak. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but they're not. Here's the thing. I have to tell you that's why most of us do not have the conversation. And that's why I'll have a job. That's why John Kim will have a job. People don't know how to even start the conversations, right? So you're not a freak. You're not alone. It's not weird that you didn't think to talk about it, but now you can. And I'm telling you, the right people that you're with are going to be so grateful, I believe, that you are like asking about it, because they've probably never talked about it either.
Yeah.
Right? But we tell people, you know, okay, Zach, so I'll be every night. You can let me know how it goes. Okay, Zach, thanks for calling. Right? Don't you think a lot of it, John, is...
Yes. Why don't people talk about sex?
Literally because what he just said. I mean, I think that's such a great example, because we're afraid that we're weird.
Mm-hmm.
We're not normal. That our partner's going to think we're freaks and they're going to leave us. We're going to say it wrong. We're going to insult them. And maybe if I say I want to be spanked, but what if I change my mind on a million things?
Right.
And then we're like, you know what? I'll just wait for my partner to read my mind or to get better at it. Or maybe I won't be this freak anymore.
Right.
And then we stay with someone for years or months too long. And then we just silently suffer and have bad sex and then we die.
Yeah, exactly.
But we don't have to.
No, I think it starts with the absolute, you're right. It starts with a conversation. Why are we so open to talking about other things that we want in our life? But when it comes to the bedroom stuff, it's like just a lot of jumping to conclusions.
Exactly.
We
just jump to conclusions and then we just shut ourselves down. We have all these coping mechanisms that allow us, like we don't feel. So what I want to know, Jim from Florida has been on hold, and Jim is 74, and I want to help Jim. Hey, Jim, what's going on? Thanks for calling Sex with Emily. I'm here with John Kim, the angry therapist, but he seems pretty chill right now.
What's up, Jim?
Hey, what's going on, Jim?
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Great. How can I help you, Jim?
Tell me everything. I just discovered your program in the last couple months, and I wish I'd met you 24 years ago because I love petite women who love to talk about sex. I'm 74.
Okay.
And my wife and I, I'm in a sexless marriage. I've tried everything. I've tried toys, porn, discussions.
Okay.
She doesn't like to talk about it. She had a, hysterectomy about 5 years ago.
Okay. How old is she, Jim?
She says she has 71.
71, got it. Okay. What did she say she has? Pain?
And not so much pain. In fact, I just got your the caramel chocolate.
Oh,
so
good.
So I've been listening to you.
Good, thank you.
It's one of the other things, because of some of the medicine I'm on, it's hard for me to get an erection.
Right. Okay.
But that to me is only a small part of what you can have in terms of sexual intimacy.
It sounds like maybe you're just really missing the intimacy right now. That's not just penetrative sex.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
All right. And then your wife is...
Resigned to watching porn and masturbating.
Okay. Well, that's okay. You know, that's nothing wrong with that. But what I would love you to do is
I don't think there's anything.
Right. Well, Jim, have you asked your wife, have you said, you know, well, what is it about sex? You know, you said she had a hysterectomy, and I might have cut you off there, but I thought you were saying she had pain. Is it more like she's lost complete interest? Have you asked her, like, maybe what she does like about sex? Okay. What does she say she doesn't want it?
Yeah, it's just a lack of interest anymore.
Okay.
And, you know, her comment is, you know, all my girlfriends feel the same way.
Yeah.
And I keep saying that everything I read, anybody, you know, you can have sex up into your 80s. And I heard you say that the other day.
Yeah, also. You can. And so how was your sex life before 5 years ago? How was it 8 years ago?
Very good.
Okay.
She was never one. In fact, I used to, you know, all my buddies used to say that, you know, the wife had the headache story, and mine never did.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, this is what I think, Jim. I think the first thing you have to do is just ask her, like, maybe you guys could do a little walk down memory lane and be like, remember when we did have sex? Like, what is it that you loved the most about our sex life? Or you could just say, what's your most memorable time we had sex? Or what are the things that maybe you can remember things she liked? Because maybe it is just starting slow. Maybe it's about, you know, a massage. Maybe it's drawing her a bath, massaging her feet. I feel like for so many of us, we get shut off from sex and we forget because touch is so important, and kissing and holding each other. And so maybe you start slow with that. What do you think, John? Do people call you John Kim?
Yes. thank you.
People call you John Kim, the angry therapist. Kim.
Jim, first, I want to applaud you for even making this a priority, even calling in.
I think love it.
Someone who's 74 and is actually talking about this is amazing, right?
Yeah, he's amazing.
So kudos for that. And also, it's hard to have sex when you don't feel sexy. And I wonder if because of, you know, her past and history, all that has made her not feel sexy as a being. And so I wonder how much of this is that. So I think it would be about supporting her and making the best that you can, making her feel sexy as a person. And of course, that's her job too, right?
Yeah, exactly. But right, Jim, how do you think how's her self-esteem right now? Do you feel like she's maybe not comfortable with her... with her body? Do you think it's any of that stuff?
Well, I think there is some of that. She's actually, you know, she's in very good shape before. And we're retired in Florida, and she is in better shape than most of the women.
Well
that's external, though.
When she was, that's the other thing. When she was 20, she was the type that when we were at the beach and she walked across the street in a bikini, all the cars stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I believe that even though I think her body's still really nice, I'm not sure she does.
Right.
Yeah, I get that.
And she had an important job.
Okay. Do you guys ever... All right. Well, I mean, Jim, I think maybe just starting the conversation with her.
Tell her how sexy you think she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let her know she's sexy. Let her know that, you know, maybe if there's things that you know that do make her feel good, like pampering, going away together, finding things, you know, if she's stressed out with work, maybe she needs some time. Because, you know, we have to remember that the brain is our largest sex organ and we're not focused on it at all. It can be hard. Like, it's really, especially for women to go from 0 to 60 and zero to turned on. So it's like maybe there's ways you could slowly, you know, bring her back to those feelings again. Of feeling pleasure and, you know?
Yeah, and I think foreplay starts when you wake up.
Yeah.
So staying connected.
Staying connected, yeah. Touching, asking her what she needs from you, not just sexually, but how does she need you right now in her life? Maybe she needs you more emotionally. Mm-hmm. Maybe she needs physical. Maybe she needs, there's something going on where you could just be of support. Because I'm telling you, when we learn to give to our partners in their time of need, however they need it, then you get back what you need. That's just kind of how the energy works there. Okay, Jim?
Okay.
All right, Jim.
I have started that type of thing by getting her to let me in the shower for a few minutes.
Oh, good. Okay. Start small. Yeah, little baby steps, right? Like, you know, that's a thing. This is never. Thank you so much, Jim. I'm so glad you found the show. You can find me here. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low-net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. Every night, just try the next step. That's what I love. It's like 5 minutes a week. People can just call, do one step, do the next thing. It's tough, right? Connecting in long-term relationships.
Yeah.
Keeping connected. What have you learned now? And
you know, I think that's why things like date nights are important. I'm in front of me, next to my coffee, I see a sex toy here. I think a lot of people.
It's not used.
It's not used. Okay. especially men. And this is, you know, I think also culturally, they feel that if they have to bring things like toys into the bedroom, then it's going to take away from their quote unquote manhood. And I think that's also something that needs to.
It's such a problem. Right. Exactly. They're like, no, it's actually. But I understand that. I feel like a lot of what male sexuality is based on is performance. Yeah. And if they interpret a woman needing something else besides their penis, like they're failing as a man. So that's the messaging. But once we can get people over that hurdle and realize, no, actually, it feels, it's really hot to see your partner turned on, and it can feel great for you too. Do you have experience with toys?
Yes, but I didn't experience toys until mid to late 30s.
Okay.
But once I've discovered them, I was like, oh my God, it's like a whole new land.
Right? You're like, what was I worried about? Exactly.
But I think the prevention was, again, the locker room talk, me thinking that if I brought a toy into the room, then it makes me less of a man.
Right.
So
how would you, because this is why you're here. You're here for many reasons, John Kim, the angry therapist. But I want you to talk to the men and tell them, like, you're a dude, you work out, you do, what I love is you actually do CrossFit therapy sessions.
Sure.
I feel like you're the kind of guy I want people to hear that, like, you were them. You were this every man who didn't like vibrators. Maybe you didn't know about pleasing women. I'm just guessing. You had anger. You had resentments.
Right.
You thought you were the most important thing in the world. You did believe that if once I get the car, the job, the house, the wife, I'll be happy. And you realize, no, none of that. All that stuff is not true.
Right.
And now you're here. And you're successful. And you have, I think you have a successful relationship. So I want to hear more about, like, your journey of, like, how it, looking at you now.
Yes.
How do we get men on this path?
I think everything.
You talk to them.
Yeah, I think everything starts with, and it's a great time now to talk about this, but
right?
I think it's about working on your relationship with yourself.
First.
And during and forever, you know? And part of that is, what do you like? what part of that is self-care. Part of that is, it's not just about, because I think for men, it's a lot of external, like the scoreboard, performance, corner office, what you drive, instead of who you are, you know, your worth as in how you make someone feel.
But to me, that is such a big jump for in a society where men are just, it's based on what they make, how they right. can support you.
Sure.
Could almost say it's primal.
Absolutely.
I am my bank account. I am my car because I am here. I have to provide for family and for people. Like, that is who I am. I have to spread my seeds. So, okay, John Kim, you're telling me to get in my body and feel. That's bullshit. I got to go out and make a living. My wife wants that. You know what I'm saying? So how do you...
For me, it was about connecting to parts of me that I have locked into a hope chest, because I think as we grow up, we become adults, we lock parts of ourselves away.
So what was the first thing you opened up?
Like you mentioned, CrossFit, right? When I was 12, I used to break dance, and it made me feel so alive coming home from school and just spinning on my head and being part of a crew. And so I grew up, put my fat laces away. And then when I found CrossFit, it tapped into the spirit of that 12-year-old that I had locked away because I was so busy trying to, you know.
You're on the track,
trying to chase the rainbow.
What?
And so things like that, you know, then I got into motorcycles and I kind of became a whole person by connecting to parts of myself that I've locked away. And by doing so, it throws you into a journey, a little man journey. Well, not little, but a big man journey.
Man, yeah. Right.
And then you got to slay your dragons and you start learning things about yourself, what you like, what you don't like. And I think in that space, you actually then start to talk about your feelings and talk about who you are. And then if you're in a relationship, it helps everything because
now
you're
being present. So explain that to me. So John Kim in a relationship at 46,
right.
What can you give me an example of like maybe something you would have done at 36 that you see probably a lot of your clients doing and then something now at 46, like
not being there, being in my head. Also, of course, in the bedroom.
Give me that example. Okay, you were present in the bedroom maybe. So does that mean, did you care about her orgasm?
No.
You like, didn't care?
No.
You're like, whatever, I've heard about it.
So if I cared, it was because it meant that I was more of a man because she came.
Right.
Not because I wanted her to have a good experience.
Wow.
Today, I actually want her to have a good experience, right?
But sometimes can men do this journey, but that was through you feeling.
Yeah. And I think part of that also, you know, being exposed to things like pornography at an early age where a lot of it's programming, you know, the stuff that you see when you're, I saw stuff like that when I was 12 and it was basically.
What did you see?
Well, men with baby arms in between their legs.
I'm like, is that a new fetish porn?
No,
I get it.
Making me feel inadequate. A lot of women being submissive and dominated and all of that stuff, you know? And I can't imagine today, because this was in the 80s where to get pornography, you had to like know somebody.
Right, exactly. It was like VHS, maybe if it worked.
Right.
I get it. We're going to take a quick break and we come back even more with John Kim.
Can I just say, by the way, because when we're talking about porn, I want to say, you know, as still today as a 46-year-old man, I do watch porn. I just know it's a movie now. So I don't want to sit here, you know, saying that I never watch porn or I don't, you know, I think that porn can be healthy.
Of course.
It just.
But you're like, it's.
There's
it's
distance.
Not real.
It's not real.
Right.
It's not, that's not my ideal of, it's fantasy.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's so healthy. No, you're right. No, I'm telling you, this is the problem. And now men at 12, there's much, boys at 12,
so much,
it wasn't like they had to find someone who had some porn.
Right. Now it's literally just on
the
phone.
It's everywhere. Yeah. And then also, so what is going on with dating today? I feel like, is it all swipe culture?
I think dating is dead.
People never want to grow up. Dating's dead.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, when I was growing up, you had to ask someone out. And then I remember getting excited about it and watching my car and changing my six-disc CD changer and, you know, all the stuff, right? So now it's
oh, my God. I love it. Yeah.
It's literally shuffling through baseball cards and lots of false advertising. And there's this thing called ghosting. And I think we're allowed to hide behind our phones. So we're not able to actually exercise the muscle to be human and to communicate. And it's like, you know,
this is it. This is exactly it. We had to, I keep saying, no, I can't believe I'm this person. I'm like, guys, in the 90s, early 2000s, you had to go up to someone and talk to them. You had to kill your own meat. Like you had to go fishing.
Right.
You had to do the work. You had to earn it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just you sat home half watching Netflix, chilling, smoking a bowl. No, you had to go out and the muscles are just atrophied. They're gone.
So the fear is all the kids growing up now, if they don't have those tools, how are they going to earn or build a relationship if they can't even, you know what I'm talking about?
Right. Yes, this is what's
If they're finding someone while their date is in the restroom, how are they going to stay in a relationship and really look at themselves?
Exactly. So yeah. This is the thing. But they're like, we're telling them this.
Well, I think what's happening now, though, is
they're not listening.
But what do we do? There's a swell happening where I think a lot of people are now sick of the swipe culture. And there's this thing called self-partnered, where people are like, you know what? I'm going to work on myself. And I think this is what's going to happen. I'm hoping it's what happens. To get people to kind of look inward and go on their own self journey.
So tell me I hope that people are doing that, because this whole journey of like, it's sort of similar to what you were saying about, we feel like something's broken if we're not dating. So we're like, well, it's almost like our duty on the planet is to keep dating, keep having sex, but giving people permission, it's okay to slow down and say, what do I actually want? Who am I in without a relationship?
Right. I think our duty is to be the best version of ourselves as possible. And I think the ripple of that is sex and all the great things that happen with sharing your life with someone else. But I don't think that's the sun we revolve around.
Right.
I think we need to kind of take the power back and go after our dreams and do what we feel is honest to us. And then if we happen to meet a partner, now we're coming in as a whole person. Instead of trying to fill holes.
Right. Like that whole thing, like I need someone to complete me. It's like,
yeah,
no, you have to be the full person.
Right.
And before you know, if you're looking,
right.
And I think when we were talking about like how I was dating before, I definitely think I was like this person, not they complete me, but they fill me up in a way that I couldn't fill myself up.
Yes.
But
that's
codependency. Journey,
enmeshment and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So you don't do that anymore. So talk to you about some of the guys. What I love is that you see people who got, or they come in and they do a CrossFit session. Are you going to hike?
I've done that. Yeah. So I never had an office on purpose. And so I just started meeting people in coffee shops and on hikes. And I thought, like, if we're going to talk about life, let's do life while we're talking. And I called myself a coach because as a therapist, you're not supposed to do that. So I'm kind of like the therapist that went rogue. And still today, I just get on my Harley and I'll meet you at the coffee shop, and I just show up, jeans, t-shirt, and we just shoot the shit, you know?
Wow.
I mean, of course, with boundaries
and stuff.
Right,
exactly.
But I'm now more of a coach with a clinical background instead of a therapist that sits on the couch with you.
This is exactly what I want. I keep saying, like, I was been joking this year saying, should we just, before I knew you, John Kim, I've been saying, should we just tell men they need to see a coach? Because men are more likely to see a coach
that
than
is
a
true.
Therapist.
That is true, because they file coach under performance.
Right.
Right? And then, but you know what? Great. Then I'll be the Trojan horse. Let's talk about your performance, and then let's talk about your feelings.
But how do you get in there? Like, because I believe that for getting him in the door. So if someone already comes in the door, already emails you or contacts you, mm-hmm. and they're like, "I'm ready for an appointment." But they get in there, and is there like a typical or something that you've seen a lot of lately? Client that comes see you, or patient, or however you call it.
You know, because of social media, they already kind of know who you are, and I'm not for everyone, right? And so when they meet me, they've already been following me for a while or watching my videos or whatever, podcasting, and so they know kind of what to expect. So it's not a surprise to them, and I've never seen them before, so I just show up. It's almost like a blind date. I just show up and wait for someone to approach me. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you sit, and then how does it start? Tell me why you're here. Like, if you're at a coffee shop, are they comfortable?
Yeah, they're a lot more comfortable than you would think. You know, I've had people cry, but I also had people just be loud. And it's almost like I take the approach like we're friends. And I've like last week I did a couple session in the park, Echo Park, and they brought a blanket, and I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And there was a breeze, and
they're
just chilling. And it was like a 2-hour couple session that we did in the park, and I was like, this is like, I'm not saying it's for everyone, but for me, it's honest.
No, it's for me too.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I was going to go to the park anyway. Might as well do therapy.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's therapists listening to this thinking like, I would never do that. And then you shouldn't.
But exactly. Of course. But that's why you're the angry therapist. Angrytherapist.com. My question though is, when they're sitting there, like a man comes to see you, it's your first meeting.
Yeah.
But like, I guess I'm wondering about the process.
Yes. So I think also
going from
now,
angry, thinking that it's all about performance, to like, oh, I have feelings. I feel stuff, you know, like being like, no,
right.
There's like deep stuff you're blocking and
I take a whole life approach, and I always try to figure out what's happening underneath, because it's never about what they came to see me for.
Exactly.
Right. So they're coming to see me for one thing, and then you realize there's all the stuff underneath.
Give an example though.
My wife won't sleep with me. Okay, great. Let's talk about that. And then we start to dig deeper, and then there's patterns, and it turns out, oh, well, because of... Because
I cheated on her, or because I one time told her this.
I don't create a safe space, or because I steamroll her, or because I don't do the dishes. I mean, whatever it is.
Exactly.
Right?
Okay, keep going. I'm excited. Yeah.
And then through that, and I think with me, and I don't know if it's because I work out or ride a motorcycle or whatever it is, I think they can relate to me because I don't have a shirt and tie and I'm not coming at them. I'm coming with them.
Right.
So that's always been kind
of a great distinction.
Yeah.
You're not like the expert sitting there telling you. You're like, let's have a conversation.
No, I also confess of my default. And I mean, I do it. I practice transparency on my blog.
That's what I love too. So in watching your blogs and your Instagram, The Angry Therapist, I was watching some of it and I love that because it's so, because people do think, well, if you're a therapist, you must just be walking through life doing everything perfectly and you have boundaries with everybody and you express your, we're human.
So the whole thing was an accident. I didn't sit down and I was like, oh, what's my brand? So after I went through a divorce and I was at the lowest point of my life, I remember Tumblr. I created a blog on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And I called it The Angry Therapist, thinking no one would ever see it. And my very first post was called My Fucking Feelings. And I just started to talk about, I didn't have any friends. I was in a dark place. I was broke. And so I just started talking about like the pain that I was in. And I think pulling the curtain back and showing myself made people kind of curious, like, who's this weird Asian dude talking about his feelings? That it's also a therapist. It's kind of confusing to them.
Right.
And so I think that's what, you know, got people interested in this kind of different way. Yeah.
And you never had to pretend that you weren't, you know, that you were something other than you were. And maybe people like that because they feel like, oh, I get him.
I think it's more relatable. I think today people are more interested in who you are instead of the letters after your name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I think you're right. Like, all they know is you helped them. Like, I love that. Okay, we're going to take a call. You can call me, 888-947-8277. We can talk to Nick in Vermont, 39. Hey, Nick, what's going on?
Hey, Emily, I'd just like to say that I've been studying the stuff that you've been, the diagrams of the clitoris, the stuff, and the diagrams, and I'm getting your book.
Okay, so awesome.
I'm utilizing your information. I have a comment for Jim that you know, men should not consider their job and how much they earn as their entire identity.
Sure.
Can you turn your radio down? Nick, turn your radio down. Nick, turn it down.
I'm sorry. It's down.
Cool. You may continue.
So we're much more than you know what we can earn and what our job, and it's just what we do, not who we are.
Right.
Yes, and easier said than done. I still struggle with that myself.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And I still struggle with it, but you know, it's like it's something. You know, I'm a son. I'm an uncle. I'm friends to people. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I am. You know. My recycling job, my composting job, you know, that's what I do. That's not who I am.
Right. Right.
Thanks for calling in, Nick. Bye. We have John calling from Oregon, and he's 51. He's John King. Hi, John. There's so many Johns tonight.
Hello.
Hi, John. How you doing? Thanks for calling. What's going on?
I am doing great.
Good.
Well, you said you want to know who John King was. Well, I'm just telling you, I'm here.
Oh, hey, John King. What's up? Oh, I did earlier. I was like, John King. Yeah.
Not much.
Hi, John King.
Yeah, you said, I don't know who John King is, so I just thought I'd let you know who I am. And
hi.
Just want to say hello.
Hello.
Love the show.
Thanks, John. So nice to talk to you.
Love listening to you.
I'm so glad, John. Love having a real John King in the family here. That's excellent. Like, thank you. Bye, John.
Emily, you could hook me up with these diagrams. Of the clitoris. Yeah.
I guess maybe they didn't teach that in therapy
school.
So listen, the clitoris has 8,000 nerve endings. It's the only organ that is created for female, exists for female. I know you know.
Yeah. 8,000.
8,000 nerve endings in the clitoris. Sensitive.
Guys, be very careful with it. I think guys are too aggressive with it. And when I say guys, I'm talking to myself as well. Because 8,000 nerve endings is a lot of nerve endings.
The circumcised penis has 4,000 just to give you context.
Wow, right.
Yep.
So it's double.
Double. Exactly. Yeah. You're good.
Stop biting it, guys.
Don't bite it unless she wants you to bite it. Do you believe that? So when you were saying, when you were the 10, John Kim, 10 years ago.
Yes.
You were like, it's about your orgasm and your pleasure. But now, are you in a relationship?
I am.
You're in a relationship. So do you feel like now you've kind of realized that like her pleasure is important? I just wonder how men can make, it was more about learning.
I wonder also part of it is just being 46, you know, because it takes more than the wind now. And also I'm not just thinking about orgasms, but I'm like, buy me dinner, like hold me. Like I'm actually softening as a being So there's part of that happening as well. So it kind of slows down and makes you explore instead of...
Do you want her to buy you dinner or you want...
Yeah, I mean, I was just kidding.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. We were talking about that all night. We're like, who pays? Who doesn't?
Oh, right, right. I just meant that, you know, when you're in your 20s, all you want to do is...
Bang.
This put is it like, in.
Can
right.
I ask you... So I don't know what to do here because I've got this staff of amazing people. A lot of them are in their 20s. Mm-hmm. Kristen's in her 30s. Brian in 20. Okay. And then they're going on dates and they're swiping and it's fine as they should. They haven't exercised the muscles. It's fine. Then they're telling me about the guys they're meeting. I'm like, okay, do I even need to? He's 26 or he's 24. Or he hasn't done the work yet.
Yeah.
Do they have to just wait till they're 10 years from now?
Well, this is a generalization. Like
what do we do with the millennials? And Kristen wants to get married in a week. She hasn't met the guy yet. She's 32.
I really do.
She's 30. Wow. 30
help me, John.
Two okay. now, all she wants, but it's like... Anyway, what do we do with that?
Because
they're not 40s yet.
Man, I think men turn the corner a little bit later than women. I think around 26, women start turning the corner.
Yep.
They ask different questions. They want different things. They want substance. They want eye contact, right? They want men, I think, like 32, 33.
Maybe.
Like, so if you're dating someone who's 26, you just have to know that that's it. I'm not saying that all men are like that.
I need them to hear that from me, you. That if they're 26, they're like, they might not.
And I'm not saying that they're like,
what?
I said I never said
I'm just saying,
you.
It's like your parent. I'm like Jamie's mom. We worked together for 4 years. She's 26. Like, she hears me, but like, I'm like your parents. Like, ask your father. Like, but John.
So if you date someone who's like 24?
No, never.
Well, but I'm just saying, you're going to get a 24-year-old,
exactly.
Probably. But, you know, he may be mature and he may have, you know, I'm not saying that a 24-year-old can't have a healthy relationship, but if he's playing video games, he's also 24.
Yeah, right? No, exactly. I mean, I dated someone recently who was 37 and he was still not up to par.
Well,
yeah, ex was 39 and he was still playing video games.
I was 35, picking my nose and having no sense of self-purpose.
But you had to go through what about the guys? They call it the Peter Pan syndrome. Do you see these guys who are into their 40s are, and they're like, they haven't had anything tragic happen. They never even committed to get brokenhearted. No one died. So they're still like kind of on their 40-something path, but they're not like wanting to feel.
Yeah. And I think today it's the internet has made it worse because now we're able to really not grow up, you know? I think that back in the day in the 50s, when we had these very hard definitions of what a man looked like, I think part of what was kind of cool with that was you entered your man journey earlier than today, where you can be 37, you know, the Peter Pan, not grow up, not have a job, you know, whatever.
And then what happens? They just kind of find someone who's equally, who doesn't really need stuff from them?
No, I think what they don't realize is that they're losing time, and then when they're going to be 50 and they're going to be like, oh, okay, now I'm looking for something.
Now I want a baby.
Now I want something that's bigger than me.
Yep. And are you seeing that in your clients sometimes?
Oh, all the time.
In their 50s, would you say?
Yeah, and I think a lot of women are frustrated.
That's
big time. I get a lot of frustrated women.
Do you?
Yeah. So my next book's called Single on Purpose because of this frustration.
That's me. Not even because frustration. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
But part of it. But yes, single on purpose and single is fine. I want to change single. I love the being alone is one of the bravest acts and one of the biggest commitment to yourself and self-pleasure that you can do. And I think it's important.
Yeah. And it's not
Can't wait to read your next book. What's it? Tell
me. It's not about anti-relationships. It's about a pro relationship with self.
Okay,
yeah.
A pro relationship with self.
Yeah.
All right. I like it. Okay. I got to ask you the 5 quickie questions we ask all of our
guests. Quickie questions. Okay.
Ready? John Kim. Biggest turn on?
The mind.
Biggest turn off?
Arrogance.
What makes good sex?
God. Communication.
Something you tell your younger self about sex and relationships?
Throw away all your definitions and blueprints.
Number one sex tip.
Shit, sex tip. Kiss. More kissing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I love kissing. Yeah.
Thank you for being here. They can find you at theangrytherapist.com. Check out your book.
Yes. And Journey Coaching, JRNI, if you want to check out the coaching.
We'll put
stuff.
This all in the show notes.
Awesome.
If you go to sexwithemily.com and you click on the show notes, we'll have all the links to all your things.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
All right, guys, thanks to my awesome team, Ken, Kristen, Elisa, Brian, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.